Welcome to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and joining me is Phil Conlon, who's been with us on and off and around CIUT. He's at Classical Underground, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. How you doing, Phil?
Yes, good evening, Phil, and I'm fine, thank you, and Happy New Year to our listeners. May it bring great joy and great perplexion to those who do perfection. Ill in the world. Perplexion. May they be perplexed.
Yeah. Well, good. I hope, yes. I think people are a little bit bamboozled, actually, because they get little signs and messages. Phil, an idea maybe we should... Well, we do a little bit on the Taylor Report, but we should probably advise people. The reporting on the pandemic is very parochial. And I don't know why we're listening to Doug Ford. He isn't really an intellectual giant, and he's not surrounded by people with great whatever. I understand that there are medical professionals that would come out and do answer the questions. But in terms of getting a picture, we should really be talking about other sources of information, particularly you could start with the World Health Organization, if for no other reason than to get their, they provide numbers, they provide criticisms, suggestions. And if we are parochial and we wait around for the prime minister, or we listen to the prime minister only, and we listen to Doug Ford only, or you know, the spokesperson, that we're really putting ourselves behind the eight ball. We need to be talking about importance of a public health system and respect for it and building it and seeing that it's secure and provides all that it needs to. If you remember when the pandemic began, there was a lot of discussion, well, why don't we have, I thought we had a little plan here. I thought we had an office full of people ready for the emergency. As well, they cut the funding to that. We went in the office and there's nothing there. We should remember these things.
Well, Phil, if we can do some remembering, we should remember that just prior to the pandemic, I mean, just months before it, Doug Ford came out with an announcement that the province of Ontario was going to reduce funding to all of the municipal medical officers of health because that's by a massive amount of money. I mean, the city of Toronto says that the funding cutback over the life of one term of the which is like a 4-year term of one city council was going to be $1 billion, and they were like really shocked and saying, are these guys really intending to do this? And then, of course, the answer was yes, they were intending to do it. And then the pandemic hit and the story disappeared. Yes. But that was the last word on public health from Doug Ford before he actually was forced to confront the fact that there is something called public health and there are issues.
Yes. And the main voices of the Western capitalist states, I'm emphasizing capitalists because socialist systems are proving themselves to be much superior in dealing with this. But people, Trump, later Biden, but a lot of the Democrats as well, and Doug and Justin Trudeau, they were talking about how they're going to weather it and get people back to work and et cetera. That wasn't a plan, as they say, and it was mainly in the realm of feel good talk and reporting. We needed and need now a very sober examination of how to fight the pandemic, how to provide care and secure the health of the population, and because we are in an environment where all the Western leaders feel it necessary to advertise themselves as adversaries of the People's Republic of China. it colors how we look at the facts, because if we get facts, news from China, it has to all be turned into, oh yeah, they protected Wuhan, but yes, they've got remarkably low numbers of infection, however, and they turned it into this kind of, frankly, a propaganda exercise, which endangers the population, because they, frankly, the People's Republic of China did it right, as did Vietnam. Cuba has done an outstanding job, even though they're under a kind of economic siege since the year 1959 from the US, but they have a commitment to serving the people. I hate to use language like that, which people find that sounds archaic or unbelievable, but that happens to be the foundation of the government. And they've proved this, of course, the Cubans, with their levels of medical care, which surpass those of the United States by quite a distance. I think that I saw today that the Chinese, at this point, their total deaths from the COVID are 4,700. And they have a population of 1.4 billion. 1.4 billion. Their COVID deaths are 4,700. And they were the one who first, as Boris Johnson likes to say, took it on the chin. They got hit and had to respond. Fortunately, they did. And that has not been adopted, of course, in the West. They're not capable of it. But I mentioned that figure, 4,007. The total cases in Canada are deaths are 30,218. We have a population of, what is it, 37 million? And we have 30,218 deaths. China, 1.4 billion, and they have 4,700. And what does it do to? Well, we had a Canadian doctor, works at the World Health Organization. He said, People's Republic of China did everything right in terms of isolating those identified with having COVID. Then they traced all contacts, and then they isolated them and tested them. And that's a procedure. Here's the remarkable thing, Phil. That's a procedure which the Chinese population accepts. And there's an important reason. The Chinese society today, 2021, is more united than ever, I would say. You have to go back a long time to see that kind of confidence in their government that the Chinese people have. And why would that be? Well, because the government is run by a political party that led the armed struggle against the Japanese. They are the party that drove foreign powers out of China. Particularly Japan, a long, grisly war. They did all that. Then when they got power in 1949, they set to work to provide basic care and respect to the population. And it's been a long march, but it's one in which clearly at this point, where when you see the amazing numbers, we're talking about 600 million lifted out of poverty in a few short years, just because they said we're going to do this, and they did it. And of course, meanwhile, building new cities, having a rail system that is the envy of the world. Why would not the Chinese people have confidence in that kind of government? And all those here who scratch their heads and all they want to say is authoritarianism, that's ridiculous. authoritarians cannot hold down people. That can't be done. The people find ways to resist and bring down authoritarians. And certainly in a pandemic, if they didn't support the government, it'd be quite easy. It would be natural if the government wasn't doing its job, that it would be in dire trouble. But by way of contrast, we have a divided, severely divided world in the West, the major powers, and they don't like each other. They're doing things for profit, so they develop vaccines, and they use their muscle to say our vaccines are going to be the only vaccines. They did that for a while, but now China and also India, by the way, and Russia and Cuba, by actual struggle, political struggle, have demonstrated that they have vaccines every bit as efficient and same quality as these Western monopoly pharmaceutical giants. But while they developed the vaccine, this past year, we lived through situations where one state after another in the U.S. Said, well, we got this, we've shipped them this many vaccines. And they said, well, yeah, but we couldn't get it done. So what happened? They wasted them. They weren't used. There's been a tremendous amount of wastage because you don't even have the simplest coordination. I like the Chinese commentator. Sorry, I don't know his name, but he said, I can't believe this. He said, I'm watching the U.S. talk about their problems. And he says, governors in the U.S. are allowed to flaunt federal policy. Those are all Americans. But a nitwit governor in Florida can make a wreck havoc. And they can even go into political posturing. And meanwhile, people are getting COVID and dying. So that's a flawed system. The U.S. recently had a little show about democracy, the Democracy Show. But they can't make theirs work. They call it a democracy. I don't know what to make of that. But the big lesson should be, we need a people's republic. We need one where it says, you know, bottom line, we serve all the people, not Her Royal Highness. Not the empire, not what the monopoly Yang and their political friends think. No, one that will provide basic care and address all social problems under a banner of equality. That's how it has to be done. And we're being shown that. We should say we have a media that is just running interference for a basically an ideological position, which says the only way that public health issue like this one can be done is under our system, because it's a superior system. You have to tell the people it's superior. But they have, most people have clear enough vision. They can see it's not superior. It isn't superior. By the way, you know, this past week, I saw headlines that the life expectancy of the Chinese people is now greater than the American. Did you see that story, Phil?
I did see it. And the kind of like even 10 years ago, but especially 30 and 40 years ago, they weren't even close. I mean, the Chinese life expectancy figures were more than 10 years less than what the American figures were. And now China has surpassed it. Yeah. Of course, it's an interesting statistic. And I read a little explanation as to how they arrive at the figure, that they look at the conditions in the world as of the day they're taking the measurement. Let's say these conditions would be static for the next 100 years. Given these conditions, how long would somebody born today live on average? And that's the statistical exercise. And they say, well, now for the US, the number has gone down during the pandemic. It's gone down each year of the pandemic, and it seems to really be in a plunge. And it's it's an odd thing, but American capitalism was when it was a little younger, wasn't nice, but you know they had epidemics and things like that in the United States in the late 19th century. You had, at least in some parts of the U.S., I know certainly where I come from in New York, you had very advanced public health bureaucracies that were very efficient, and they dealt with things like typhoid and tuberculosis, and they dealt with it far better than we're dealing with COVID now, even though they didn't have 10% of the medical knowledge and technology they have now.
You recall that Ronald Reagan basically said, "Oh, we don't need all these. What is this
public
health
stuff?" That's what he said.
And since then, they of course managed to bring back TB, and other killers. And Reagan, he's the original from whom these other people are knockoffs. You know,
good point. It was
Reagan.
Yeah, he was the guy also would not admit that there was such a thing as AIDS and that it had to be, it was of any concern to public health.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the band played on. Isn't that the book?
That was the book. That's right. Yeah.
Well, they tried that with this pandemic, actually.
Yeah.
But they weren't able to, when they realized they weren't going to be able to just stuff it off and have to, and the other thing, by the way, when you have a divided population, Americans are profoundly divided, then you have political division. As we said, you can't get minimal cooperation. And so the way they persuade or leverage each other to get anything done is to say, well, this has gotten so bad, we have to do something. So I recall very well the Trump saying it'll be gone by Easter. Remember, he thought the Easter Bunny was going to take care of the COVID. And only when it was clearly a menace, then he could say, well, I guess we better do something. But you see, look at the different social stance of the Chinese leadership, because the moment they heard about the Wuhan thing, the order was given, close down Wuhan, shut it down. Don't let population move around till we get this thing under control. And I recall the Globe and Mail reporters were laughing, mocking the Chinese effort and saying it wouldn't work, and that they were making the public angry. That all turned out to be just baloney. But they could make a decision. The moment they saw a threat, they didn't have to say, oh, we've lost 10,000 people or something like that, that we obviously have to do something. But in the West, actually, they almost all these states waited until the numbers were persuasive so that they could turn to even their political rival and say, look, we got to do something. So again, that just illustrates we're seeing two systems. And I guess on that, we should make the point that according to Biden, the systems are adversarial, can't be reconciled, and that the U.S. must in some way or another prevail against this other system. And he's talking about how the U.S. is going to become number one again. He has to say it's number one, but it's going to even be more number one than it is right now. But when you think about the way he has posed this, he and said that he wouldn't allow China to develop. It's not going to become number one. So in other words, I understand English. He intends to sabotage. He intends to try every trick to undermine peaceful relations with the People's Republic of China. And I can't think of a more foolish thing, but it's observing it, you have to say, it isn't it interesting that the Chinese are building the trains, Chinese are engaging in space exploration. Chinese have managed the COVID crisis, and they're extending aid in terms of, you know, a billion shots of the vaccine to underdeveloped countries, because China always says it is an underdeveloped country. But I think their knockout punch is that they say, well, Mr. Biden, we're not competing with you. So you seem awfully excited. So here's Biden running and puffing and showing his muscles and calling for the crowd to cheer him on, saying, I'm going to win this. And he's, while acknowledging that the other guy is doing as well, probably better, and the other guy doesn't even say that it's a competition. You know, psychologically, I'd say, you know, that's an odd position to be in. You say, you know, I'm going to show him. This time we're going to get him. And meanwhile, the Chinese say, but we don't compete. That's not what we're doing. So you're a curious little fellow, and you speak like a Hollywood Western movie actor, but it really hasn't anything to do with us. You know, we are going to develop because that's our job and that's our duty towards our people. So we'll do that. And they just hope that he isn't as insane as his rhetoric. but that's where we are. We need a world of cooperation. We need peaceful relations between states based on mutual respect. And we need throw aside this language of confrontation and competition being number one. And there's only one democracy, by the way, Phil, you must have noticed, there's only one form, and that would be the one developed by the slave owners in Washington. They create this atmosphere where I would say they're apparently going to lose badly, but they're going to create a lot of havoc before they do finish this. One last point on that. You raised the matter of, you know, how the U.S. Goes after competition. I noticed I had a story here from the Toronto Star. U.S. to ban imports from Xinjiang region.
Yes.
And I read the article, and it says that, of course, that now the U.S., because it's been unable to do this, you know, there are companies have enter into deal agreements with each other. There are international standards. There are international bodies that enforce standards, questions of child labor, slave labor, coercive labor, et cetera. All that has to be investigated. And if a buyer says, I want to know, is that from a region that's safe? And those entities have said, there's no problem with the products from Xinjiang. So the U.S. has developed a new strategy where they're not going to listen to these internationally bona fide agencies. They're going to have their own. They will provide all the evidence. They will provide all the argument. There's no international forum in which you can even dispute it, given the way the Americans are going about it. And they say the new policy is goods produced in Xinjiang cannot be sold in the U.S. And of course, it'll be the same in Canada because we have an I yes sir form of government. You have to prove that there was no slave labor before those goods can be sold. Well, that's not really, as you know, the laws of simple, what they call this, natural law, basic law. The Americans and the British have a phrase, presumption of innocence. that has all gone out the window. This is presumption of guilt, and you have to show us that you didn't do that.
Right.
By the way, I think they'd be fools to even have anything to do with such a thing. What can you show?
I mean, you can't prove a negative. And I mean, if you don't accept the premise, which is that there's slave labor, and the Chinese, of course, don't accept that premise, how can you prove that you didn't use the slave labor when you don't accept that it exists in the first place? And of course, then the Americans don't, they don't engage in any kind of logical discourse on stuff like that. Phil, I had one of the funny things. It's not funny, but it's, but it is. You know, the Chinese people are well aware of these provocations from Joe Biden, and you really have very little patience for it. And of course, one of the things that some American corporations are trying to like talk out of both sides of their mouth, because Biden says you can't do this, you can't do that. And the corporation says, yes, sir, and they'll publish a policy. And then somebody in China notices it and says, hey, you know, that's really insulting to us, that policy. But oh, we didn't mean anything by it. And people in China are saying, well, yeah, you did mean something by it, and we're insulted. So one of the companies that jumped on the bandwagon and said, well, we're not going to import anything with Xinjiang cotton in it, was Walmart. Now, Walmart's got thousands of stores all over China. Unionized, by the way, which they're not in North America, because Walmart has the clout in North America to keep unions out. So Chinese netizens have pointed out to Walmart, well, you know, we're really sympathetic for your to your problem, Walmart. You want to obey American law, and you don't want to handle Xinjiang cotton. But here's the problem. Our paper money in China is printed with Xinjiang cotton. So we don't want you to break Mr. Biden's law. So we're just not going to pay any money in your stores, because then you'd be handling the slave labor cotton. It's, you know, it's really hilarious. And while Walmart at this point is just trying to figure out what kind of line to come up with. And one of the interesting things is that very often when some corporation makes some public relations person here say things like, of course we meant no disrespect to China, we apologize if we offended somebody, the Chinese get really angry when you do that stuff. They say that's not an apology. You know, you're just trying to talk yourself out of a problem. You know, but you don't acknowledge that you've done wrong to us, that you insulted us. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that problem of it is true. You're describing the Chinese people. The Western media always leave them out of any discussion. Like the Peng Shui case, they said, well, you know, the government says this and we say that, and the head of the WTA says, but what was really going on was the Chinese people were infuriated. And there was plenty of evidence of that. But that part isn't reported. That's downplayed. Actually, the Chinese government does have a population that expects them to stand up for the Chinese people and for someone like Meng Wanzhou. They expect that, and the Chinese government does it. But of course, you know, when you're a government, you have to take the steps necessary to get a happy result. Pardon me. And but don't again. Let's go back to what we said right at the top. This is a popular government. This is a government that has delivered. And by the way, quoting Meng Wanzhou, she said, I'm out of prison, that I'm out of being held by the Canadians, because China has a strong government. That's what got me out. And I think, that's very, very true. And that population is behind their government. So if anybody has any ideas about dividing them up and trying to take advantage of division, they don't have a chance. I mean, they got the Dalai Lama, what's that? And they got the Uyghur leaders who all live in the West. Well, they're dangerous, but China can handle that easy. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. And we'll be back with more in a moment.